So Dr. Krishna Chandra will be here for the second surgery in about 10 minutes. So while we're waiting for him and his team, we'll have a look at the second disease that he's going to be cutting away at today. This is number 18, Arustasura Vadalila. The killing by Krishna of a demon that assumed the form of a bull symbolizes destroying the attraction for cheating religion with its external show of pomp and splendor and the concomitant disregard for Sudha Bhakti. Many weak-hearted people give up the path of regulative principles and enter the path of attachment, or Raghunugan. When they are unable to realize the soul's spiritual attachment, they behave like a Rustasura by cultivating perverted material attachment. They will be killed by the prowess of Krishna. The example of this obstacle is regularly found among the selfish Dhammadrajis, the Shobhagal devotees. So what I want to concentrate on, because in looking at these demons, we're not so much concerned with what's happening outside, we're concerned with what's happening in our hearts, and that's what we want to sort of do a bit of work on. So what I want to work on here is where he says, the attraction for cheating religion with this external show, and the concomitant disregard for Sudha Bhakti, like the two go hand in hand. So this is the aspect that we want to have a look at. Okay, so Bhagavatam tells us that there are five branches of irreligion or cheating religion, and I just thought to read those because it's quite interesting. Yeah, this is from 7:15, 12 through 15. There are five branches of irreligion, appropriately known as irreligion, vidharma, religious principles for which one is unfit, paradharma, pretentious religion, abhas, analogical religion, upadharma, and cheating religion, choladharma. One who is aware of real religious life must abandon these five as irreligious. Religious principles that obstruct one from following his own religion are called vidharma. This is an explanation of the five categories I've been given. Religious principles introduced by others are called paradharma. A new type of religion created by one who is falsely proud and who opposes the principles of the Vedas is called upadharma. An interpretation by one's jugglery of words is called choladharma, or cheating. The pretentious religious system manufactured by one who willfully neglects the prescribed duties of his order of life is called abhas, a dim reflection of false similarity. One should be extremely careful to avoid these various types of cheating systems of religion. I love Prabhupada's way of dealing with this stuff. He never lets an opportunity pass without getting into the essence of stuff. So in his pulpit to 12, he says, any religious principles opposed to the principle of surrendering to the lotus feet of the Supreme Person of Godhead Krishna are to be considered religious principles of irregularity or cheating. And one who is actually interested in religion must give them up. One should simply follow the instructions of Krishna and surrender unto him. To do this, of course, one needs very good intelligence, which may be awakened after many, many births through good association with devotees and the practice of Krishna consciousness. Everything but the principle of religion recommended by Krishna should be given up as irreligion. You know, and he comes up with some really good stuff. I wanted to share another, it's a really strong tool for me in this analyzing thing, but there's another really amazing definition he gives have a listen to this. This is from Adi 707 Corpora. It's really amazing. An illusion is a misunderstanding which arises from inattention while hearing. Illusion is a misunderstanding which arises from inattention while hearing. And there's more to come. And cheating is transmission of such defective knowledge to others. Isn't that amazing?
Oh my God.
I read it again. I mean, this is, I use it so much.
Yes, I mean, it's really good. It's amazing.
An illusion is a misunderstanding which arises from inattention while hearing, and cheating is transmission of such defective knowledge to others. So keep that in mind, because we're going to be doing Gundicha 3 surgery today. It's going to be a little bit close to the bone. So. Don't worry. That's Krishna Chandra's in charge. And the Shringadeti. Okay, so it's very important that we realize that surrendering to Krishna starts now. Prabhupada's talking about many births. But we have to start now. And it's a very practical minute-to-minute thing. And it's an expression of love. It doesn't count if it's an expression of fear or of duty. We're talking about love. Because as we've mentioned many times, this word sharana, from sharanagati, the primary meaning is surrender.
How do we know our means we are supposed to preach, but then, you know, like the mode, you... How do we know if
the statement is scary, like how do we know?
Are you getting back to that? Okay. Yeah, we're going to do a bit of churning with this. I got a few things lined up, so just be a bit patient. Okay. So we're not talking fear. We're not talking fear. We're not talking duty. We're talking love is what we want. We want to develop our love for Krishna. And we need to consciously develop it through the process that he's given. You know, if you love somebody, you want to do things their way, basically. This is a really big topic, but I want to deal with it through a series of reality checks. Now, with reality checks, most of you are aware of the way I work, but this is not a matter for discussion. This is a matter for contemplation. We're looking at our own hearts, not others. And what I usually do, most of you are aware of this, that I'll ask a question, then I'll read something to trigger off a churning of the consciousness, and it's up to you to see what you do with it. So I wanted to do a couple of reality checks about this cheating business, and we'll be looking at am I cheating myself, and am I cheating others? And cheating others, we'll be looking at whether we're doing that as an individual or as part of an institution. Because we have responsibilities in both areas, if we have to be part of this institution. Now, first thing I wanted to do, because it's just one of my things, is wanted to look at our relationship with Nam. Because practically speaking, we can get a pretty good idea. We can get a pretty good idea of our relationship with Krishna by looking at the nature of our relationship with Nam. So I want to have a look at that first. Let me just get a few things lined up here.
I'm scared.
No, it's okay.
I'm just painkillers, Mataji. This one needs painkillers.
Okay, so we're going to start. So remember, an illusion is a misunderstanding that arises from inattention while hearing, and cheating is a transmission of such defective knowledge to others. So Harinam is a religion for the age. Am I cheating myself in relation to my relationship with him? First question. You can close your eyes and just deal with this internally. When I chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, do I chant Rama or Ramo? Very prevalent in kirtans these days is Ramo. In my personal practice, do I do that? I want to read you a couple of things about that. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura explains that niyamas or rules are of two kinds, vidhis or prescriptions and nishedhas or prohibitions. Whatever is enjoined as one's duty is a prescription. Whatever is enjoined as restricted is a prohibition. There are many vidhis or prescriptions for chanting Rama within the Mahamantra. So I'll read a couple to you. This is from Prabhupada. These three words, namely Hare, Krishna, and Rama, are the transcendental seeds of the Mahamantra. The chanting is a spiritual call for the Lord and His energy to give protection to the conditioned soul. This chanting is exactly like the genuine cry of a child for its mother's presence. Mother Hara helps the devotee achieve the Lord Father's grace, and the Lord reveals Himself to the devotee who chants this mantra sincerely. No other means of spiritual realization is as effective in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy as the chanting of the Mahamantra. Let's chant together.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Read something from the Chaitanya Upanishad. This tells us that the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is made up entirely of Krishna's name. It's the root of all mantras. The name of God is the root of all mantras. It's a splendid thing that brings joy to all. This root mantra is chanted by the words Hare, Krishna, and Rama. Hare is he who removes the knot in the heart in the form of material desire. One can unite with the Lord by remembering the root Krish and the suffix Na, which gives us the ultimate hymn of praise, Krishna. Rama, not Rama. Rama is he who gives pleasure to everything and is a form of bliss. Now, I also wanted to read something from Bhaktisiddhanta about this and tell you a little story to show that our acharyas are not so impressed by our little deviation. This is Bhaktisiddhanta. We have to follow Shastra. Kali Shantara Upanishad clearly states, it is a mantra. Sri Chaitanya did not say Nitai Gaurad Isham, but gave us the Hare Krishna mantra. We cannot introduce man-made imaginary kirtan. This is really sweet. During his stay in Puri in 1936, Srila Sarasvati Thakur had a Nantavasadeva Prabhu lead a kirtan procession around the dam, with a specific order to enter Srila Haridas Thakur's samadhi, occupied and managed by Charandas's followers, and to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra loudly, preceded by the alternating rephrases, and it's in the Bengali, I read that, the name given by Mahaprabhu, the name sung by Haridas, the name sung by Bhaktivinoda. So, you know, which name are we going to chant? You know? So this is just a little, you know, a gentle start to the surgery. Let's move on. Okay, so in Vrindavan, many devotees, many ISKCON devotees, greet each other with Jai Radhe. Do you greet them with Jai Radhe? Or Radhe Radhe? Very common. But if we're actually interested in Kinkari Bhav, we're seriously interested in this, then we have to remember we're in Radharani's dham. And her mood should be our mood. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says something very nice in his Gita Mala. For serving the lotus feet of the charming daughter of King Vrishabhanu, I will become a sheltered maidservant of her maidservant. Indeed, I will live only for the happiness of Sri Radha, and I will always endeavor to increase her joy. I am absolutely unable to tolerate Sri Radhika's pitiable condition when she is suffering in separation from Sri Krishna, but I am fully prepared to immediately give up my life for the sake of their happy reunion. So, does it make sense to chant her name? If her mood, you know, this is one of the primary services in Manjari Bhav, is to actually the uniting of Radha Sham, even with a Shakti. So, you know, like, what are we doing here? What are we doing here? This is just things to think about. I'm not drawing any conclusions. I'll leave it to you. But, you know, it's a very interesting thing, because in terms of Tattva, if we don't have the level of realization of, say, Gokasharas Babaji Raghunathas Goswami in relation, they have four someone they gown with, they had that relationship with them. If we don't have that, and we're doing this kind of things, then we might as well chant Kali Lalit, Kali Lalit, because that's who we're addressing. If we approach Radharani for worship or glorification independent of Krishna, it's not Radharani. There's a form of Kali called Kali Lalit. Exactly the same as Radha. Can't tell them apart. Unless you have Prem Bhakti. Can't tell them apart. So, who do we come here to worship? Just a point. Okay, we'll move on. This is an interesting one. Do I use mantras like Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Radha Radha? Do I use this kind of mantras for my cell phone call or tone?
For what?
Cell phone. Cell phone. Call or tone. This is rampant. This is rampant with the phones. What's the problem with that? The thing is that what we're trying to do here is churn the consciousness a little bit and wake it up. How can you be Krishna conscious if you're not conscious? If you're not making conscious decisions about what you're doing, where you want to be and how you want to do things. It's so important. So, it's rampant. This mantra on, I have to deal with it. It's rampant on these phones. But what are we looking at here? This is Nimbaka Mahamantra. Now, that's fine for Nimbakas. I've got nothing against the Nimbakas. But their mood is somebody. And their destination is Ananda Vrindavan.
Where did they get the mantra from?
I don't know. I never looked into it.
Sanat Kumar Samhita says something about
there's something there, yeah.
But that Nitai Goradisham.
Oh, that one's a concoction.
That is completely made up.
Yeah, that's he said he got it in chants. I had a long discussion about another thing in 1916 or something. Yeah, but with this kind of thing.
And that Radhe Krishna, that is Radhe.
Yeah, it's all like a grudge because it's.
That is Nimbakacharya.
Yeah, and it's also the Vrijvasi's mood. It's very strong. You go out to Vashana, it's what they sing every morning on the way up to Sriji Mandalati. It's what they sing. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful chant. I got nothing against the chant. But what I'm saying is, are we followers of Mahaprabhu or not? Where we stand on this?
But if we go there to the temple, then we can sing
Bindam. Why not? Yeah, what's the problem? But what I'm pointing out here is that, what they're looking at is Sambhog. What they're looking at is Ananda Vrindavan. This is not, Mahaprabhu's mood is completely different. So where do we stand on that?
Yeah, basically it says that they are actually inhabitants of Aishwarya Golo.
Yeah, exactly.
And, Amar Bina Prem Vrajaprem Jitinare. There's no one else actually without Mahaprabhu, one cannot enter the real Vraj.
Exactly. But you have to be careful there. Because we're not talking Mahaprabhu, we're talking about Swami Bhagavan.
Yes. If
you're not talking, very subtle thing.
Yeah,
because if you worship Krishna and Dasya, you go to Vaikuntha. If you worship Mahaprabhu as Yuga Avatar, in Dasya, you go to Vaikuntha. But if you worship Mahaprabhu, that's why in Bhagavan, in Dasya, you'll achieve Radhashyam Prem. Subtle stuff. So, this is what I'm just trying to,
What is the difference here? Like, if you worship Mahaprabhu as, you said, as avatar, so what is
Yuga,
Yuga avatar, and if you worship...
We'll talk about that another time. Let's keep on trip. This is an interesting one. Do I see the upsurge of kirtan in USA as a great Nam Sankirtan success or as a possible failure?
What is that?
kirtans are really taking over in America. All the yoga studios, everybody is chanting Harinam. So how do we feel about that?
They have to pay for going inside now?
I don't want any externals on this. I don't want any offense. I just want you to churn it. And I'm going to help you churn it by reading something from Bhaktisiddhanta. From every quarter of Bengal, the rhythmic choruses of kirtan were resounded, accompanied with the clangor of khol and kartals, uplifted hands, swaying bodies, and the intermittent whooping. Even young lads could quote universally known Hare Krishna, you know, that Harinam, Harinam verse. Yet chanting was mostly undertaken not for the sublime purpose introduced by Mahaprabhu, to cultivate an attitude of selfless loving service to Krishna, but to gain piety for achieving material gain, or for removing obstacles to sensual pleasure and worldly comfort. Widespread faith in the holy names had led to their being invoked aberrantly as mystic deterrents to epidemics, or to hasten the advent of overdue rain, and especially since Harinam eradicates all sinful reactions, kirtan mitigated people's fear of Jamaraj. And thus arose a pernicious yet persistent misconception that those who chant the holy names need not observe common morality. Although Bengal reverberated with the names of Krishna, Rama, and Hari, no one was becoming purified by that offense-ridden chanting. Contrarily, the simple propensities of such offensive chanters often exceeded those of persons with no claim to piety. Hence, Srila Saraswati Thakur ruefully referred to the Prakriti Sahaja's chanting as being like that of parrots or gramophone. This is something he said in his Chaitanya teachings. Can kirtan really be considered genuine if some worthless people without any ardor for Hari Seva come together and howl? True Hari Kirtan is that of genuine devotees who serve Hari according to the principles enjoined in the Vedas and allied Shastras. Kirtan is not Hari Kirtan if conducted for the prevention of cholera or pox epidemics, for prosperity and trade, of the Lord Pratishtam and Puja. Such kirtan is Maya kirtan. So, you know, I just got to get a few things right here. Another thing. Do I see any relationship between chanting Hare Krishna and honoring prasadam? Do I see any relationship between them? I just want to read a couple of things here. This first one is from Prabhupada's Adi 16. The holy name becomes manifest when one engages in the service of the holy name. This service in a submissive attitude begins with one's tongue. One must engage his tongue in the service of the holy name. Our Krishna consciousness movement is based on this principle. This is from Adi 17. Krishna's holy name, transcendental qualities and transcendental pastimes are all equal to Lord Krishna himself. They are all spiritual and full of bliss. Therefore, material senses cannot appreciate Krishna's holy name, form, qualities and pastimes. When a conditioned soul is awakened to Krishna consciousness and renders service by using his tongue to chant the Lord's holy name and taste the remnants of the Lord's food, the tongue is purified and one gradually comes to understand who Krishna really is. When a person is attached to Krishna's lotus feet, this is from Maya 19. When a person is attached to Krishna's lotus feet, he does not eat anything offered to Krishna. Because nama nama yet I'm different. So, you know, like, it's interesting stuff. But the point that I'm wanting to make here is that, are we caught it? Are we catching it? And what we're saying is that in this age, the mouth is a door to faction prime. The mouth is the door to factual prem, to factual liberation,
yes.
Krishna prem.
Yes.
And actually, we don't need any of these severe nuisance austerities. It's so simple. For the simple. It's so simple. Basically, you know, in terms of the tongue, control of the tongue, all we have to do is four things. Chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra attentively, which means we're looking for offenseless chanting. Honor only prasadam. Avoid sadhananda. And they were a bunch of Vaishnavas. Urjibhattam. It creates a lot of trouble. So, that sort of is a bit of a look at things. So I wanted to do a few prasadam checks, reality checks. This is internal. I don't want to embarrass anybody. Let's have a look. A growing trend in ISKCON is to equate vegetarianism with prasadam. Restaurant visiting and takeaway food buying is becoming increasingly prominent. Do I honor only prasadam? Personally, looking at myself. Do I feed my children bhog in the form of commercial biscuits and snacks? Do I eat in restaurants? Do I buy bhog from commercial suppliers and offer them to Thakurji?
Like sweets?
Sweet Prabhupada gave exception.
Okay.
Prabhupada made an exception for that.
Then what kind of bhog are we talking about? Like?
Oh, some interesting is happening.
Pizza.
Pizza is the big one. And Doppler and paratas and so many things.
Say that again, Mataji, please.
What did you say, Mataji?
Dokla.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's sweet, only sweets made in India or made, you know, Prabhupada made exception for sweets that it's possible to offer sweets to Thakurji, but is it exceptionally sweets which made here or it's a general rule?
That I have to check. Do you know that?
Mataji, here the main concept that I would see like while going abroad also is this, that one, the sweets have to be made in a place which is pure vegetarian. Sometimes sweets overseas are made in places where they're serving other things also.
Yeah.
So one thing that we can see for sure is that it has to be sweets made in a place which are only making sweets and they're like pure vegetarian place.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, they have to be made under very hygienic conditions, which can be offered to Thakurji.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so those are the two big constraints that are there sometimes. And I've seen overseas that a lot of times they add egg to the sweets to make them crisp. So when we are looking at any sweets outside India, we have to be very careful whether egg is being added to it.
They also write if in the same factory they use egg, they force to write, although they clean the machines, maybe some traces are left for those who are allergic.
Right.
Now in Europe, they are forced to write that may contain some, you know,
traces
of egg or some other stuff. They generally write these things.
But what we do have in the West?
You have like Gujarati people having shops and
but, you know.
Those kind of things you can get.
Okay.
just add a little bit. To finish this whole deal is the ghee is the essence of sweets. The ghee which is being used in India as commercial ghee for making sweets is full of animal fat. So even to, you know, offer this, it's so dangerous. Probably it's safer abroad.
That's interesting.
What they are, the ghee which they are using out here, there are scams after scams. Because they are making in bulk purposes and they are not using cow's ghee. And they are not even using pure buffalo's ghee. It's mixed with, there's a whole thing, a scam that came on TV.
Mm-hmm.
How they are mixing animal bones of cats and dogs. I'm really sorry to, but in the Kali Yuga, it's at home, otherwise, just forget it. It's
better at home. Whatever you can do at home is best.
Very, very trusted.
Also, very vegan stuff nowadays. I mean, devotees have a successful prasadam factory also in Germany, that they have many different types of vegan sweets. And it's like becoming more and more, you know, without me.
Okay, good. Now let's have a look at institutional reality check. Restaurants serving prasadam or bhog?
Nobody knows.
The Buddha's restaurant?
I know.
Yes.
I checked it out.
Okay,
we pride ourselves in massive prasad distribution. Are we distributing bhog or prasad?
Mass distribution.
We distribute so much, you know, here. Everywhere. ISKCON's famous for prasad and distribution. What's the standard of offering? Is there an offering? What are we distributing?
How do we know?
if we can't see.
What I, you know, I'm this is not churning. Discussion.
Churning.
This
churning.
Is just churning.
Internal
you know,
churning.
Just churning stuff.
Yes.
Because what I'm trying to do is that, you know, how long are we going to stay on the Kanista platform, for God's sake? You know? Maja means we're conscious, we know what's going on, and we make appropriate decisions about what we're going to do about things. So that's why I'm doing this. It's just to sort of, you know, have a look at things. Okay. Okay. I want to do one last reality check. Do I have firm faith that Prabhupada has given us everything, including Radha Nuga Bhakti? Do I have firm faith in that? And if yes, is that faith blind or is it informed? You know? I wanted to read you something about this. I was interested in what you said about piercing the ear, because that's coming from Bhakti. Bhaktisiddhanta says a similar thing. I'm going to give you copies of all these handouts, but I didn't want to, you know, like, have a paper war in the middle of what we're trying to do. But this is very interesting. And this is looking at, that, because the interesting thing that we have to be aware of, the Prabhupada has given us Radha Nuga Bhakti in many different ways. One of those ways is through Harinam. There are many different ways that he's given. We can get that into another time, but I just wanted to mention something about practicing Radha Nuga through eligibility in chanting Nam. The name of the Lord and the Lord himself are not two separate entities, but one. When the sound of the holy name passes over the lips, the conditioned sense of hearing and the conditioned consciousness initially process the sound as if it were material, and that is how it is perceived. As a result, only the external ear hears it. Since the other senses and the mind, which is a collector of sensory experience, are envious of the ear, which they consider to be an equal partner, the result is that such chanting does not affect the cleansing of anattas. We don't have the capacity even to theoretically know the name and the Lord of the name are one. Yet, just as piercing of the ear is one of the Vedic rites for young children, when our spiritual ear has been pierced by the holy name, the other senses give up their envy of the auditory sense. They no longer quibble with the ear, which alone can perceive transcendental sound. Then the flood of Prem pours forth from all spiritual senses and cleanses away the contaminants of opposition and malice. Thereafter, the Lord's beautiful form, qualities, associates, and pastimes are revealed in the name himself and experienced by the chanter as something quite distinct from his previous experiences in the mundane world. Then the kinds of worries and distractions of the mind that are typical of the conditional living being cannot remain. This is beautiful. We should constantly pray to the holy name for his mercy. A person still filled with anattas should never engage in smarana of Astakalya Lila. When we learn to hear as we chant, the opportunity to remember will automatically arise. At what time? At that time, Astakalya Lila smarana will become possible. There is no need artificially to follow it. This is from a letter to a disciple by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati in December 1928. Another letter. No, this is from one of his books. Smarana is possible by the power of Nam Sankirtan. The completely manifested name is Astakalya Nitya Lila. Realization of the name and service are not attained without smarana based on Nam. Nam Aparag Kirtan is not Nam Kirtan. As the bud of the holy name begins to sprout just a little, the supramundane forms of Krishna and his associates become manifest. And when it reaches a flowering stage, the fragrance of Krishna's 64 qualities is experienced. When the lotus of the holy name fully expands, Krishna's Astakalya Nitya Lila, although beyond material nature manifests. So this is also very beautifully explained in Bhaktivinoda Thakura's Nam Mahatmya at the end of Saranagati. But you're catching my point. That, you know, we are so contaminated by the, you know, the smarter Brahmins and the Babaji's concept of Radha Nuga Bhakti that we're missing the point. You know, there are so many entrances. Look, if you look at 19, Madhya 19, Mahaprabhu is instructing Rupa Goswami, and he's talking about prem, the easiest way to attain prem is through hearing a chanting. He doesn't even broach titles like, you know, Vaidhi Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti Sana. He doesn't touch it. It's just a straight flow from Shraddha to Prem through hearing chanting. You know, so many avenues. Even Vaidhi Bhakti. Even Vaidhi Bhakti has its role. Kid can't walk. You've got a crawler. You know, got one of these trolleys. It's like that. So, you know, like, we have a tendency to sort of, like, compartmentalize and, you know, like, do all these weird things with something which is very holistic. But I just wanted to read that to you. And actually, before I forget, because I've got a terrible memory these days, I'll give all the handouts to you so you can, you know, have a look at that.
Is it necessary, like, to hear about, like, you know, some devotees say then if you want to develop Madhurya Bhav, you have to hear about Krishna and the gopis and Rasa-lila.
But the thing is, you know, like, when you read this article, it'll be very interesting for you, because a more basic question, actually it's not in this article, it's in Jagadharma in the 40th chapter, but a basic thing that we're looking at is, gets back to our qualification. And I'm not talking qualification in terms of as it's usually used. There's another way that Bhaktivinoda Thakura looks at it. First step, if you want entrance to Jasa Kali Lila in Seva Bhav, is Shravandas, hearing about Krishna. Okay. Now, one thing that people are not aware of, in my experience, is that there are two kinds of Shravandas. There's Hinakrama Shravandas, no steps. That's what we see in this one, en masse. Sporadic reading, you know, forget about Krishna as a personality, let's have a look at the philosophy. You know, so much stuff is there that's just got nothing to do with reality. But then, if we are serious, and we don't want to look at all that, but if we want to look at ourselves, we're serious, we want to make some advancement in this. So then we have to practice Sudakrama, Shravandas. That means pure steps that will lead to Varuna and so on, like that. So then, what does that mean? It means we have to hear Nitya and Namitika. Both are in Krishna book. Both are in Bhagavatam. We have to hear Namitika and Nitya. We have to do it regularly. And we have to do it with conviction that this is what I really want to do.
Let me finish.
If we do that, then rasa can develop. Rasa will develop from that. It will not develop from Hinakrama. And that's why so many devotees, they find so many diversions in ISKCON, because they're not getting the taste. Or they go away. One or two. I don't want to be part of that scene. You know, what they're doing with their lives, that's up to them to decide. I've got nothing to say about it. But I know what I want to do with mine. I want Sudakrama. So, you know, it's not a matter of, you know, I got to hear this, I got to hear that. First, let's get things in line. You know, we need to read in a certain way. Is that making sense?
Oh, but I mean, if we read Bhagavatam regularly, is that not automatically Sudakrama?
Yeah, of course. Of course. But then, there has to be a mood of submission. You know, Bhagavatam, you know, we talk about, you know, so many lessons to learn from Bhagavatam and, you know, all these things happening in Bhagavatam. But the Bhagavatam is rasaful. It's full of rasa. It's Krishna. It's an incarnation of Krishna, just like Nam is. So, you know, it will depend also on the way you approach, how you're approaching them. You're very fortunate because you have another Srila Radha-Govinda Maharaj. He's amazing. You know, he sold out to Bhagavatam. Because when we're talking, you know, we forget that if we're talking surrender to Krishna, in this age it means surrender to Bhagavatam. It means surrender to Nam. These are incarnations. It means surrender to Mahaprabhu. Isn't it? Is that making sense?
Yeah. So how do you read Bhagavatam in resignation?
You ask her about that and learn how her Guru Maharaj does it. Okay, so just a few thoughts. Are we ready for surgery? Okay, so we'll begin our second surgery, and first we'll discuss Prabhupada's Krishna book. Anybody got anything to say about that?
It's just Prabhupada doesn't really speak too much about Arishtasu here, but what I was...
None of the acharyas do. It's interesting. I mean, I guess it's such a nasty family.
So I was reminded of, you know, Prabhupada, a lot of places he mentions that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yeah.
You know, whether he's a child or he's a youth.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was imagining that Arishtasu, this big bull, and,
huge,
you know, and Krishna just like a baby, you know, not too big. It's like holding him and just like throwing him.
Yeah.
So.
He's not baby at this stage. He's come on.
That was like quite young still.
Yeah, he's still young. But
yeah, so like Prabhupada says that he does not have to go to you know, a gym to work out to, you know, build muscles and things like that. He's always Supreme Personality.
Yeah, he doesn't have muscles.
Yeah.
When you see these patterns around pushing muscles, he doesn't have muscles.
So I thought that was I was reminded
of.
So,
any other thoughts?
I just thought while reading how in the chapter before Prabhupada explains that Krishna relieves the earth from the pain she feels when the cows walk on her, and then Arishtasu comes and he digs, and and he is so cruel, and he's so, like, so some of the demons, the Brijavasis didn't know that they are there, but when he approached, like, really everybody was so frightened and suffering, and then Krishna came and immediately relieved the pain, and the Brijavasis were so happy.
Yeah.
But then I thought, no, he's going to get it from Radharani, no.
Yeah, the whole wheeler and false. He had his purpose, you know, like he made good use of that, didn't he? Radha Shankar manifesto. Yeah. One thing that I liked that interests me, that first paragraph of Prabhupada where he says, Vrindavan was always absorbed in thought of Krishna. Everyone remembered his pastimes and was constantly immersed in the ocean of transcendental bliss. But the material world is so contaminated that even in Vrindavan, the asuras or demons tried to disturb the peaceful situation. So we're living that. Yeah. That's what's actually happening. It's hell. So even, you know, we may be trying to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Braj by being absorbed in thought of Krishna and all these things, but the energy here is very asuric. It's becoming more and more asuric. But the lesson to learn from that is in Kali Yuga, it's not the age of Dham, it's the age of Nam. So if we're living here, then, you know, like, we have to take full shelter of Nam to really get full benefit of being in the dark. Like that. Okay. Any other thoughts? Let's read from...
But the natural thing is to remember Krishna, no?
For who?
No, I mean for the soul. And for... I mean, everything else is just... artificially.
Depends whether you're an internal devotee or an external devotee. For an internal devotee, remembering Krishna means everything and just the right way to do it.
For an external devotee, he might be still thinking, I'm remembering Krishna, and you know, in an external way, and that's all what we're discussing, you know. So a person like you, everything is normal, you know, okay. But if somebody who's living on an external platform will never get to this point. He wouldn't even realize the difference between internal and external devotee.
I think we're talking about ourselves. Yeah, we're not talking about out there, we're talking about ourselves. So we don't yet have that realization. We're working towards it. As you're saying, you know, like the essential thing is that these people, Prabhupada talks about this throughout Krishna book, that if you love somebody, then you're spontaneously going to be absorbed in thinking of them. It's just a natural thing. You know, even on the mundane plane. So, you know, like, you see a kid's shoes, you remember your kid, you know, like that. So it's a natural, it's our natural position, but we're in a very unnatural circumstance, you know. And even 15 years ago here, Uripan was a lot stronger. You don't have it. So in a way, it's a blessing, because there's a trap of living in the Dharma and becoming attached to what you see around you. Mm-hmm. Rooting those sanskaras can bring you back to this place. Right? So in one way, it's a blessing, because it means that anyone who's serious and got a bit of brain is going to realize, okay, I should take shelter of the eternal Vrindavan. You take shelter of the acharyas, how they see Vrindavan. Like that, you know. And then, you know, life is a lot different. And you're not so much disturbed by the covering that's accelerating here. Like that. So in one way it's a blessing. It forces you to take shelter of now, to take shelter of the Nitya-lila of Vrindavan. That's good. Is it okay? But when we're talking external, internal, we have to remember where we're at. You know, we're a long way from internal. You meet somebody who's internal, they're amazing. Like with Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, one of my friends, she's a white witch, and she's a devotee. And she does a lot of healing of different kinds of things like that. So the disciples of Pramod Puri Maharaj, when he was very, very ill, this was before she was a devotee, they called her to do some work on him. They were attached to him being around for a bit longer. So she came, and she had a very high opinion of her skills at that time. And he wouldn't let her touch him, but she could work like a good inch away from him. And she was working over his body. Now we're talking about somebody who for over 80 years has chanted over a lakh, I'm the guidance of Nityasiddha, associate of Mahaprabhu and Radhasham, Bhaktisiddha Sajivita Thakur. When she was doing that, every chakra that she wanted to work on, there was different lila going on. There's different lila going on in the body. And it was happening on a daily basis when she was trying to help him. And after 3 or 4 days of that, she just fell at his feet. And she said, "You tricked me. I thought I was coming to heal you. I've come to be healed by you." She took initiation from it. So, you know, like, and there's also that story of Arjun. When Duryodhan, he's really upset, you know, because Krishna's giving all this facility and all this special attention to Arjun. But he's the king. He's a competent king. He's a pious king. Why? He's not giving him facility. And he's stomping up. One morning he was really angry about this. He's stomping up and down the palace grounds. You know. And Narada was, you know, our friend Narada, he was lying over here. He sees, okay, you know, something's troubling Duryodhan. So he comes and says, "What's the problem?" He said, "I can't understand it. Why? Why is he giving so much facility, so much time, everything? It doesn't come to my feet, it comes to everybody else but that." He says, "You meet me in plain cloth tonight at midnight." Okay, so King has it. Okay. So he met him. And Narada took him to where Arjuna was sleeping. He said, "You go in and you put your ear to Arjuna's hair. What? But he's curious. He's a king. You know, that tendency is there. So he goes in. He puts his ear to Arjuna's hair. His hair is chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. This is internal devotion. There's two examples of internal. We've got a long way to go. We can't be too, you know, excited about, you know, we know what's internal, we know what's external, you know, and then we're big time. We have to remember that we're a long way from the reality. You know, when these kind of people, you know, and I remember when I went to see Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj, I won't go into the details, we don't have enough time. I went to see him for the last time before he left as well. I just one final darshan. And I went to Puri to see him. He was a very big inspiration, gave me a lot of mercy, but when I went to see him, he was apparently unconscious. His sannyasis knew me from Mayapur and they let me into his room. And but I noticed his fingers were moving in his feedback. I noticed that. So I said, okay, if I just sit and chant with him for a while. And it was an incredible experience, that journey. I'll tell you about that another time, but it's a clue. It was, okay, I'll tell you. It was an amazing experience because his just, this was just a few days before he left. It gives you an indication of the incredible consciousness. But I started chanting with him, and within a, like that, I just got caught up in this incredible wave of Vipralamba. And I was sobbing. I could not stop sobbing. And it was coming from here. The tears were coming from here. They weren't coming from here. It was an amazing experience. And I could just feel that I was riding on the waves of his. I think it's called Ariruddha. In, you know, like, big terms. But, you know, and I was just riding on that. And then after a while, the sannyasis came in and said, you know, we have to give Maharaj oxygen and all this sort of stuff, you know, so you have to leave. And at that time, he woke up actually and gave me a final benediction. So it was a very, but that incredible.
What did he say?
I can't remember exactly. It was just something very simple, like, you know, like everything will come from Rama. He always spoke about everything will come from Rama. But, you know, just this, what I'm talking about is not what happened, but rather this person's level of consciousness. That to everybody he's looking like he's unconscious. He's on his way out. He's on his way in. This is a reality. You know? So, you know, like we don't want to, as soon as we start talking in terms of internal, external, and as if it was some knowledge about things, we know that we're on the external plane. You know, we have to keep our focus very, very sharp and just remember those that we've had the good fortune to meet. And, you know, we've experienced a tiny drop of their bhava. And that's the goal. You know, we don't want to settle for the Kanista culture around us and, you know, we're better than them. I remember something Hare Krishna said to me one time. He was being glorified by, like anything, by a GBC man, and it was a big embarrassment for him. It was for before the devotees and everything. And then I was cooking, finishing it even, and giving him his remnants at that time. So I walked in with his with the Mahaprasad, and I said, how do you feel about all that? Because I had that kind of relationship with him. So how do you feel about that? And he just looked at me and he said, in a desert, a cactus looks like a very big tree. This is real. In the desert, a cactus. You put it, but he said, you put it in a rainforest, and you know what it's about. Yeah. Okay. Are we ready? We'll go on. We'll go get some news. Interesting. Srinarad said, one day on Govardhan Hill, Krishna, Balaram, and the boys played a game of thieves and police. The demon Vyomasura came there and one by one took away the boys pretending to be lambs and imprisoned them in a mountain cave. Oh, this is Vyoma Sutra. Excuse me. Let me see here. Oh, okay. Yeah, Vyoma Sutra is next one. That's also an interesting character. But today we're looking at Arista Sutra. One day, a demon born named Arista, his bellowing filling the earth and sky with sound, and his horns tearing up great mountains, charged the Gopa boys. Upon seeing the demon bull, the gopas, gopis, and cows all fled in fear. Lord Krishna, the slayer of demons, reassured them, saying, "Don't be afraid." Grabbing its horns, Lord Krishna threw the demon a distance of 16 miles. Then the demon also threw Sri Krishna 16 miles. Grabbing its tail and whirling it around and around with the power of his arms, Lord Krishna threw the demon to the ground as a child throws a kamandalu. His eyes red with anger, Arista stood up again. Then with its horns, it uprooted a great mountain. Roaring like thunder, the demon threw the mountain at Lord Krishna. However, Krishna caught it and threw it back at the demon. Hit by the mountain, the demon became a little agitated. It struck ground. With its horns, it tore the earth and splashed the water. Grabbing the demon's horns and whirling it around and around, Sri Krishna threw the demon to the ground, just as a great wind picks up and throws a lotus flower. Leaving aside the form of a demon, that soul assumed the form of a Brahman. Bowing before Lord Krishna's lotus feet, he spoke words that were choked with emotion. The Brahman said, "I am a Brahman. I am a student of Brihaspati. My name is Varatantu. I had approached Brihaspati to study under him. One day, I sat with my feet facing him. Angry, the sage said, 'You sit as a bull sits. You have offended your guru. Fall, now become a bull.' O Krishna, by his curse, I became a bull in East Bengal. By associating with demons, I became a demon as well. By your mercy, I am now free from that curse of being a demon. Obeyances to you, Sri Krishna. Obeyances to you, the son of Vasudeva. Obeyances to you, Lord Govinda, who destroys the sufferings of the surrendered souls." Narad said, "O King, after speaking these words, the student of Brihaspati bowed down before Lord Krishna. His effulgence filling the worlds with light, he went by heavenly airplane to the higher worlds." So there's not so much about Aristasura. There's a little bit in Vishwanath's commentary on Bhagavatam. Let's have a quick look at that. That's not a lot. Maybe I'll just read where he's commented rather than just read the Bhagavatam. He mentions, it's interesting in light of Radha Shamlila, Radha Kundlila, that he mentions that he came in Pradosh Lila, when Krishna's just getting ready to go for Rasa Lila. So that was interesting. And he terrified everybody when he came. And he also says something very interesting about his killing. Bhagavatam says, "Vomiting blood and profusely excreting stolen urine, kicking his legs and rolling his eyes about, Arista thus went painfully to the abode of death. The demigods honored Lord Krishna by scattering flowers upon him." Vishnu says that the word says in Bhagavatam about he went to the abode of death. Then Vishwanath says that Arista underwent great difficulty, and then Jamaraj came, and Jamaraj killed him. Interesting. Rather than Krishna himself. But nevertheless, he attained liberation. So I found that an interesting point also.
Oh, even though Jamaraj killed him?
He got Krishna's, he still got the same mercy. Hmm. So it doesn't look like Krishna's too interested in these cheating, these bulls. Hmm. But, anything else? Any comments? Or?
There was nothing mentioned about Radha Kundlila, no?
It's there in the purport, in Bhagavatam. But I didn't want to get into that, because we're mainly talking about the anartha that he represents. It's beautiful, but it's not really relevant to what we're trying to do right now. I mean, we could give,
it's interesting, though, that the gopis were chastising him for killing Nipo.
Yeah, it's also interesting that they chose to use where Aristotle put his hoof print to start the digging. So they respected the culture. But, Interesting.
Just a question. Sure. What's a show bottle devotee? I mean, why the word show bottle?
Show bottle means that, you know, you've got a bottle on the shelf and you've got a bottle in the cupboard.
Right.
Okay. So show bottle means that you've got an image that you project to everybody else and then there's a real you.
Hare Krishna explained it like that, that in the pharmacy they have that medicine bottle.
Okay.
In the, you know, it's the show outside in the window. Okay. That one doesn't have the medicine inside, only the label.
Oh, interesting.
There can be water, anything. It's only like a bottle, and inside, when you go inside, you say, I need this medicine, which is displayed outside, then they give you the real medicine, but the one show bottle is only the one who's display. But the medicine
that's
is
really good.
The medicine
that's
is
really
not
good.
Inside.
It won't work, it's just for show.
It's
only
really
has the label.
Yeah, this label then. It's okay. We've got to look at ourselves about this.
So this article, and it mentions that how Vishnu Jain Maharaj got really inspired when he started the kirtans in the beginning, and then he started singing Ramo, Ramo. So once Prabhupada heard that, so Prabhupada called him and he asked him, who's this Ramo? You know? You're singing Ramo, who's this Ramo? So that's when Vishwanath Maharaj said that that's when I stopped singing Ramo. Because, you know, Prabhupada said, we don't know any Ramo.